This podcast is brought to you by WCRFM in Wolverhampton.
Our Earth Week on WCRFM with Paul Dark. Interviews with key environmental officers from the Combined Authority, along with Wolverhampton's leading local groups, making a real difference in the lives of local people and globally, from fair trade to allotments to cycling and the All Saints Action Network. Enjoy. With me now is Chris Baines, or I'd like to call a legend, because he is a legend. Everyone I ever meet in Wolverhampton goes, have you spoken to Chris Baines? So
after me.
That's absolutely true, honest. Everybody says that. So we're going to talk about a couple of things, trees and flowers, because you've got a new book out, a Royal Horticultural Society book, I can see, called Companion to Wildlife Gardening. So when is it out?
And yeah, it's out, and it's actually the original. This is a fourth edition. So the first edition was published way back in 1985.
That was a while ago.
Beginning of a revolution, and it was launched at Chelsea Flower Show. I made the very first wildlife garden at Chelsea Flower Show in 85.
Did you?
And the Royal Horticultural Society were so confused by the idea that you could have wildlife and garden in the same sentence that on my Chelsea medal they actually put to Chris Baines for his wildfire garden. And I rang them afterwards. I said, you've made a mistake on the medal. And they said, oh, send it back, we'll redo it. And I said, no, I think I'll hang on to it. So it's very satisfying 30 odd years later to have the same Royal Horticultural Society publishing. It's a very different updated version, but a new edition under their banner. So we've come a long way in nearly 40 years.
So the key question is why? Why should we be interested in wildlife gardening?
Well, I think, I mean, most people actually love the sound of birds in their garden. They like to see butterflies on their buddleia bushes. People know that there's a serious issue. I mean, my career now is, 50 years, I suppose. I graduated in 69, 70. Last week, or the week before, the State of Nature report was published, which shows that, for instance, in that 50 years, 60% decline in farmland birds. So all of those things that we think are still out there, like skylarks and lapwings and yellowhammers, they're not. And urban Britain is really so green and leafy by comparison with most of the farming countryside, particularly in this kind of landscape. It's not so true in the hills, but in the farming landscape, wildlife has just disappeared. You know, ponds have gone, ditches have gone, hedges have gone, and along with them have gone the frogs and the newts and the dragonflies and all these other things. And gardens have, over that same period, and particularly over the last 20 or 30 years, I think, begun to be the place where some of those species can survive, but also very obviously the place where you can get to see them and enjoy them. And I think wildlife gardening has really caught the imagination, because it is about daily experience. It's hearing the birds as you head off for the car in the morning. You know, it's in the case of the garden where I live in the middle of Wolverhampton, watching bats in the summer evening. And that familiarity is missing from most people's lives, except in the immediate landscape. And so the idea that you can make a difference, you could actually make your garden into a kind of a service station for the local wildlife, and see more birds and hear more birds and have more butterflies and bees on your flowers if you choose the right kinds of flowers, or you put a pond in, or you put bird feeders up. That's really, I think, well, unquestionably caught people's imagination.
Yeah. So why is it, or how is it much better than just conventional gardening?
Well, there's a kind of sliding scale, really, from the extreme end where, you know, paving an astroturf and nothing lives there, through to the other end of the spectrum, which is a constant source of embarrassment to me, which is people telling me, this is our wildlife garden, and you look at it and it's full of junk and it's completely abandoned. I'm a horticulturalist. Now, I'm a gardener. My mum was a great gardener. My dad was a junior school teacher with a kind of nature table in the corner of the classroom. So my whole background is about gardening with nature. And I think that really has been quite a challenge. That, I think, is what the RHS were confused about in the beginning. Mm. They thought that this was abandoning horticulture, abandoning gardening, and just letting nature take over. But actually, a lot of work now over the years has gone into which garden plants are best for attracting pollinators, for instance. They're not all native wildflowers at all. They're certainly not big clumps of nettles in my garden. Mm. It's a more sophisticated thing than that. And with the ponds, I mean, there are far more ponds now in urban Britain than there are in rural Britain, because it's become so much easier to make a pond. Mm. And if you get the edges soft and you have mud in the bottom, then you'll have a pond which is as good as anything you could find in the countryside. And along with the pond comes the tadpoles and come the dragonflies in the summer and the birds bathing through the winter. So
you've convinced the RHS, because, you know, I'm from Surrey, so I've been to Wisley quite a lot, and I've been to Bridgewater, bizarrely. Mm-hmm. Claire is, in fact, a member of the RHS. And so you've convinced them quite categorically, because they now have these kind of wildlife gardens within Wisley, within Bridgewater.
Yeah.
And it's made you've transcended how they work.
Yeah. And they've putting that effort into research as well. So it's I mean, you're quite right. Now it's everywhere. I mean, Chelsea is really interesting, because when I had my garden at Chelsea, first of all, you could not buy a primrose or a cowslip. And my first day, I remember, when you arrive, if you've got a plot at Chelsea, actually, for the rest of the year, it's a football pitch.
Yeah.
So you're given a little corner of a football pitch. And mine had a white line corner post in it, I remember. And I wanted my lawn to be full of daisies. I mean, that was heresy at Chelsea.
Yeah.
And I spent the first day going around digging daisies out of other people's bits of football pitch to plant in mine.
Which they were going to destroy.
Well, yeah, of course.
That's not what it was.
They were embarrassed by their daisies. I just wanted more of them. Mm. And there was a wonderful moment when I had a friend who worked for the Weed Research Organisation in Oxford. And so there was this wonderful moment that only he and I knew about, where he was driving a horse box through Chelsea full of weeds, beautifully grown weeds, to plant in my garden. But the interesting thing was that all the other gardens, I just remember it so vividly, people would stand in awe, you know, so there was a silence in front of the other show gardens, because they were bigger and better and more unattainable than anything you could achieve. Round my little garden, there was an absolute hubbub of people talking, because, you know, there were wallflowers and there were honesty plants. And I remember I had a big tub of broad beans that I'd grown just for the nectar and the bees. And people were standing there saying, well, they look like broad beans, but they can't be broad beans, can they?
Because it's a Chelsea wouldn't have
exactly
broad beans.
So it was a revolution, really. Mm. And now you go to Chelsea, every garden's got foxgloves and cowslips and primroses and bluebells, and every pond is aiming to try and look like a natural stream and things. It really has been a transformation over that 40 odd years.
And you're also a tree expert, and the importance of trees is underestimated, and we do have a lot of trees in Wolverhampton, which is great. One of the problems is lots of people want to chop down the trees because they have pigeons in often and do things.
Leaves drop off in the autumn and all kinds of terrible things.
And so how did you come to all of this?
Well, I not through the usual channels, really. I mean, apart from growing up in a family that loved the countryside, I grew up in Sheffield, and so I always say my...
Although one doesn't associate Sheffield with...
I know it is, with trees being chopped down in the last few years.
It's
been a disaster area, but on the edge of the Peak District, so my family were great ramblers. I always say the mass trespass is in my genes, really. My granddad was of that generation. My dad would have been 15 or so at the time of the mass trespass that had people stamping out of Sheffield and Manchester to stake their claim to that wild landscape.
Mm-hmm.
But my actual engagement with nature conservation really wasn't that at all. I studied horticulture. I always say I spent 3 years being taught how to kill everything in the 1960s, because it was all about pesticides and bigger machines. And then I worked in the inner city. I worked in Brixton and Hackney and Deptford and Toxteth and on problem housing estates through my late 20s. Working with kids, particularly growing things, and I always feel that one of the great moments of my career was at the end of the Brixton riots, when everything had been trashed and burned. nobody had touched the sunflowers on the Tulse Hill Nature Garden because the kids had grown them. And so that taught me very early on that actually it was access that mattered.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much better to actually see a blackbird than just miss seeing a kingfisher.
Yeah.
So that's really my origins in nature conservation.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, and we will have you back another day because you are
a legend.
It's a threat from me and a promise from you, hopefully. Our next guests are three exciting young people. I don't meet very many young people, so who are from the West Midlands Combined Authority, and we're going to talk about what they're doing in relation to protecting the environment and making where we live better. So, if you tell us your names.
Hi, yeah, I'm Katie.
Katie.
I'm Jeff.
Hi, I'm Ayushi.
So tell us, what do you all have individual roles or are you a collective? So tell us about your role, Katie, first.
Yeah, so I'm the Environment Behaviour Change Officer at the West Midlands Combined Authority. So my job is trying to get people and businesses to change their behaviours to be more environmentally friendly.
And you're good at that, I take it.
I hope so.
We're living in one of the best areas, obviously. So.
Obviously, yeah.
So if you tell us what you're doing.
Yes. So I work in the kind of net zero or energy team at the Combined Authority. And I look after a really cool program called Net Zero Neighbourhoods. And I can talk about it for days, but I won't.
You've got about 3 minutes in total. So, you know, we'll get back to that in a minute.
And I'm Forest Partnership Coordinator. So trying to get trees planted across the region.
Right. Well, let's start with the forest guy, because I'm very interested in forests, because, you know, Wolverhampton is one of the greenest kind of metropolitan boroughs within the West Midlands. But we all need more trees. So give us the practicalities of what you're doing and how we can all engage in that.
Yeah. So we're doing a few things. We've undertaken an iTree survey, which is basically an assessment to see how many trees we've got across the region, where we've got loads of trees, where we don't have any trees. And we're trying to focus on planting up those areas which don't have any trees at all. So we're doing a tree giveaway, which you can apply for on our virtual forest website, which is wmvirtualforest.co.uk, and you can request trees for your community group or to give out a community event to people within the area to get those planted locally to bring up the sort of greenness we've got in the area.
And that's community planting. You can't get one off your plant in your own garden, or can you?
So it depends on the event. We're trying to promote it as community groups, but if a community group is running sort of an activity day, then you can pick up one for your own garden if you want to.
Right, that would be good. That would be good. So what about you, Katie? Tell us again what you're doing and how you're changing where we live for the better.
Yeah, so within our environment team, we've got four main things that we're working on. So one is nature. We're looking at the circular economy. So how do we support businesses to kind of move waste so it's not being thrown away? Then we're looking at air quality, because it's actually quite bad here in the West Midlands, don't you think? Because we can't really see it, we don't really
it's
think about it.
It's not as good as everywhere else. We don't say it's bad. Not quite as good.
Not just in Wolverhampton. Not just in Wolverhampton. And we're also looking at climate adaptation, because we know that climate change is happening. We know some of the impacts of it here to stay. So looking at how can we adapt our homes and support nature to kind of minimise the flood and the heat risk that we have.
So is this educational stuff, or are you spending real money?
Both. So we've got some educational programmes. So one that everyone can do is called Carbon Literacy. It's a UK-wide course that's freely available to people who live and work in the West Midlands. So you can go on that course. It's all online. So you can do it in your own time. You learn all about climate change, what it means, how can you reduce your carbon footprint, but also what can you take back to the workplace as well. So you go through that course, so all online modules, and then once you hopefully pass it, you become accredited as carbon literate, and about 70,000 people in the UK are now accredited as carbon literate. So that's one educational piece you can
get
involved with.
Does that count as continuing professional development?
It could.
Yes, I think it should. You know, CPD, I've been haunted by CPD my whole life. So and what about you? Tell us more in detail about what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So our team looks at kind of the energy end of stuff. So answering the big questions like, how can we get more renewable energy into kind of our local energy system? So that's kind of one of the big questions that we look at. But where I focus on is mostly around kind of homes and in heating of those homes. So how can we heat homes more efficiently in a kinder way to the planet and still make sure that people are, you know, living in comfortable, healthy, warm homes? Because we've got quite a lot of people who are exposed to fuel poverty and the cost of living crisis. So a big focus is working with kind of vulnerable people across the West Midlands to make sure they've got good homes.
And how does that work practically? Again, the same question as to Katie. Is that with real money or is it mainly through education and training?
Mostly with real money on our side. So we've got a big focus on actually going in and improving homes. So we've got lots of access to lots of funding programs that we can target funding to lots of homes. I think the most recent stat from our team is we have helped retrofit, which is just a jargony word for making your house more comfortable and energy efficient, 500 homes through our program over the last couple of years to make them more comfortable.
And how are you picking those homes? Are they kind of like means tested or for the more in poverty, fuel poverty?
So it's a combination of ways. We respond to basically what the government gives us. So, for example, one of our programs looks at homes that don't have gas heating because they usually have to pay a little bit more for their electricity. So one of our programs is focused on that kind of demographic. Mm-hmm. Some are focused on people who experience fuel poverty, and some are for people who are living in social rented homes and social owned homes.
So let's go take it back to basics. Why is that important?
Why is retrofit important?
Any of it, yeah.
So it's a really, really big question. And it's the easiest answer to that is to make homes easier and cheaper to heat. Cheaper is the biggest one. And then the kind of carbon benefits are a happy accident. But for the most part, is to allow people to feel empowered to turn their heating on where they're currently not.
Right. Right. And so you all work for the Combined Authority. Let's take it a step back from there, because a lot of people probably aren't fully aware of what the Combined Authority is. You know, I know what it is because I'm involved in politics and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, why is the Combined Authority really important in that kind of change? Let's go with you, Katie.
Yeah, so we're in a good position that we're across the whole of the West Midlands. So we work with Black Country authorities, Birmingham, Solihull and Coventry, which means that with climate change, you know, it doesn't stop at borders. You know, air quality as well with the M6, the M5, it goes between all of these areas. So it means that having this coordinated approach, we can bring then all the local authorities together to work on these programmes and then support them as well with their capacity and project. So yeah, we're just in a really unique position that we can then add capacity to the local authorities that we work with, and also then work regionally on helping with climate change.
So Jeff, coming back to trees, why are trees important?
I think as Katie said, they can do a whole range of things. It's not just sort of the biodiversity benefits, it's a whole range of ecosystem services. So they can trap water, which stops flooding. Their leaf cover can reduce the heat in the urban areas through shading in the summer, and they can add value to your buildings or properties. If you've got a tree-lined street, the house will sell for more, and there's been some research that's shown that if you've got trees outside your business, you'll get more footfall, so more people sitting outside the front of your cafe, for instance.
Well, one interesting fact that a previous guest said is that if you're in hospital, on average you leave hospital one day sooner if you can see a tree from your hospital bed.
That's really interesting. that social prescribing sort of aspect of
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely, and that saves an absolute really fortune cool. In kind of budget times when we're pretty restricted on money. So how is it going then? So are you having a lot of success? Are people demanding trees off of you?
Yeah, it's going really well. So on our virtual forest, we've registered 580,000 trees in the last 3 years as being planted across the region. And in terms of tree giveaways, we've had a lot of interest this year, but we're always looking for more. So I would say go to our virtual forest website, look at the request form and fill that out, and we'll try and sort some of trees out for you one way or another.
And is Wolverhampton high on that demand list, or have you got a list of who wants the most trees?
I suppose, as you said earlier, you could always do better. So I'm more than happy to take more applications from people in Wolverhampton.
But is there an area that's outdoing Wolverhampton in tree requests?
I mean, Birmingham is outdoing Wolverhampton. Bigger, so if there's any incentive to get those requests.
Well, we've got to beat Birmingham, haven't we? So what would you like to see next? So from all of your remits, you want to do one more thing. What would it be, Katie, first?
Oh, this is a tough thing when you go first. You have to think on the spot. For me, it's just people feeling that they're empowered to make a change. I think sometimes it's very easy to point the finger and be like, well, they've got, you know, have more carbon emissions than me, so they should do something, when actually we all can do something about this. So whether it is doing things like what Aisha said, like making your home more efficient, whether it is going and planting trees, whether it is doing the carbon literacy training course, a little plug there, there's lots of things that we can do. So yeah, don't just I want people to feel empowered to actually make that change and not just point the finger at others and say they should do something, because there's lots of things we can all do.
So tell us, how does one overcome the anxiety about climate catastrophe?
Oh, another big question. I deal with this every single day. I think the thing that helps me is remembering that I am doing something about it, and I'm like, you know, working for the region and working for the people around me and the people who live around me. So that's something that can be really transformative, is if you're feeling a bit helpless, because sometimes it's hard. You open the news and it's like, you know, really, really bad news around climate change and the impact. So I think something that really has helped is taking ownership and accountability of the things that you can do to influence that. So a really good place to start is just looking at like how you're using resources and energy and food in your own homes and how those decisions impact the climate.
Well, thank you for coming from the West Midlands Combined Authority. In the studio are Julie Farrell.
Hello.
And Anne Bickley. So tell us what your titles are and then we'll take it from there.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you for inviting us both in today. I'm Julie Farrell and I am chair of the Wolverhampton City Fair Trade Partnership, and we're a steering group that brings everybody together throughout Wolverhampton to support and promote fair trade. We've been a fair trade city for 19 years and something we're very, very proud of. And Anne?
Well, I'm part of the partnership as well, and I also volunteer in the shop one afternoon a week. I'm an ex-teacher, 38 years in Wolverhampton, and I used to go around teaching about fair trade and helping schools to go through to fair trade status.
So tell us, what is fair trade and how it links in with kind of tackling climate change?
Well, fair trade, like I said, we've been at Fair Trade City for 19 years. Fair trade goes hand in hand with climate. Fair trade is all about getting the people who produce and make and grow the food in the equator, the countries across the equator, a fair, decent day's pay for a good day's work. And it's fairness. The fair trade is, as the names denote, a way of trading fairly with people that grow the things that we can't grow here because of our climate. And we all know and are aware of the way climates are changing every year as we go along. And it's affecting the farmers and producers in this country even more so than ever because of where they live. And this is their sole livelihood for some people. So if the climate is affecting their crops, they lose every way of being able to earn their income for themselves and their communities. So it goes hand in hand, doesn't it, Anne, how climate change is really affecting the producers of the crops?
Well, yes, you said about, I often get this comment, well, we should be supporting British farmers, which I agree with, absolutely. But there's a lot of crops we cannot grow here, such as cocoa, tea, bananas, coffee. And it's these producers in the developing world mainly that are affected disproportionately by climate change.
So what are the kind of products that fair trade produce that they sell in the shop?
Well, there are four main areas that are important to fair trade, which are the four ones that I mentioned. There are other crops, but these are the four that we can't grow here. So,
so it's chocolate bars.
Yes, yes, tea, bananas, coffee products.
And obviously, going back to being Earth Week and climate change, these are the things that, I mean, I don't think any of us could imagine the fact that if we couldn't have a bar of chocolate or a cup of coffee of a morning. And because these livelihoods are under threat because of the way the world is, we wouldn't be able to have them, would we?
Well, so
we
no. Need to... No. No, and the fair trade standards cover key areas for environmental protection, including the reduction of greenhouse gas emission, monitoring soil and water quality, pest management, biodiversity protection, prohibition of genetically modified crops and harmful chemicals, and waste management. So the fair trade standards, they promote training for farmers, which include advice on switching to environmentally friendly practices, such as developing nutrient-rich soils that support healthy plants and encouraging wildlife to help control pests and diseases. And also, fair trade can provide access to financial support and expertise in tackling climate change and supporting long-term environmental sustainability. So the standards are there for these farmers to get themselves out of poverty, really.
Brilliant. So, so Julia, tell us about the shop. Where is it?
The shop is in the Manda Centre. You can access it from Victoria Street. And it's next to the YMCA and opposite the Manda Community Hub. It's been there, how long has it been there now, Anne, roughly? It's been, had a few places in its lifetime,
it has,
hasn't it?
About 4 or 5 years.
Different places, it's doing well, isn't it? And the Manda Centre have been kind enough to actually put flooring in the Manda Centre with arrows, and you can look at the floor and it'll lead you to the shop. Yep. So the shop is just but one place. You can buy fair trade and fairly traded products.
So what got you involved originally?
I'll go way back. It was actually the late Lord Bilston, Dennis Turner, who first introduced me into fair trade. He invited me along many moons ago, nearly 15 years ago now. And it started from there. I was a volunteer in the shop when he was at Darlington Street before they had the fire. And I built my way up, and I was proud to be asked to be chair of the steering group 2 years ago.
Excellent. And so it's built on the idea of justice, really.
Oh,
it?
Yes, trade, absolutely.
Justice for in trade.
Yes.
Yeah. And so what got you involved? And you've been involved a while?
Oh, I have, yes. I mean, as long as I've been a teacher, I've had a passion for fair trade, which is a long time. And I go into schools and the children understand it totally. And then they go home and tell their parents, and you're sort of educating the tomorrow's consumers.
Right. So, is there a website people can go to?
Yes.
Tell us the name of the website.
Well, it's fairtrade.co.uk.
And is there a link to Wolverhampton's place within that, or is that just the general one?
We are on the, if you put Fair Trade in Wolverhampton, we do come up on the City Council site where you've got all our contact details, and we are visible on Twitter and Facebook as well.
Excellent. So, thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
And I will see you in the shop one day soon.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having us. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
The legend of No Limits to Health, and that is Sam Henry. How are you, Sam?
I'm mighty fine, Paul.
That's what I like to hear. So the big thing about that's the best thing for the environment, above all else, is cycling and not driving. And you've cycled here today?
I certainly have. I'm pleased to say that I've parked in the Civic Centre in the specially made cycle storage
cages.
Wow.
We all need more cages. And so tell us about No Limits to Health.
Yes, Paul. No Limits to Health is a social enterprise based in Wolverhampton in East Park, and that enables children, young people and adults to experience the joys of cycling for health, well-being, sport and leisure.
And so tell us, what's your core mission then?
The core mission is to deliver cycle-based activities that reach residents from under-resourced communities, and also that bridge the gap that currently exists in Wolverhampton and the West Midlands regarding physical health and also, equally importantly, mental well-being, Paul.
So how does cycling improve your mental well-being, do you think?
Well, I must say, Paul, that one of the joys of living in Wolverhampton and the West Midlands, including Birmingham, is that we are blessed with one of the largest extensive network of canals in the country.
Yep.
I heard a saying that Birmingham and the West Midlands has more canals than Venice.
Absolutely.
And the good news is that the Canal and Rivers Trust...
Sorry, I really want to make a sinking joke there, but I won't.
but it's amazing, Paul. Really, I'm singing the praises of the resurfacing.
Yeah.
So back in the day when it was just pure a mud towpath.
Yeah.
They've improved it now.
Yeah.
So you can cycle from Wolverhampton to Birmingham, and it's amazing, mate.
Yeah.
It's just great. And then the nature that you're going to see. What are the birds that I love watching along the canals is the heron.
Mm.
And the majestic heron. And the wingspan is just amazing. And seeing the herons when you're cycling down there toward Birmingham.
So have you always been a cycler?
Yeah, well, since the age of 13.
Yeah.
Up until the age of 13, I didn't have a bike because my parents couldn't afford to buy a bike.
Mm-hmm.
I was given a bike at the age of 13, and it literally changed my life.
Mm.
Because once I had that bike, I saved up my... I had a paper round back in the day,
mm-hmm.
saved up my pennies, and I restored that bike, which was given to me by one of my best friends, Herbie. I stripped it down to the bare metal and rebuilt it from scratch, because that was one of the things that we used to do back in the day. You know, these days they've got the PlayStations and they're in, you know, headphones on. But back in the day, you were always out mm-hmm. in the backyard building a bike or something. That's what I used to do.
Mm-hmm. And so how does it fit in with East Park? Because I know you're based at Mount Shiloh Church in East Park, and you're on the East Park kind of Friends group as well, aren't you?
Absolutely. So I'm really pleased that I live in East Park, and that just round the corner from where I live, you've got the Mount Shiloh Church. But the key thing is, Paul, is that the pastor there, Gilroy Brown, they're a very close friend now of mine. Gabe is a very close friend. And he gave permission for us to have a cycle hub on the church grounds. And that is a good news, because it's a win-win.
Mm.
I've got a pool of local volunteers from the local church and community. But then you've got the facility, which is, you know, it's a free facility. I've got a lease there for at least 7 years to have the cycle hub. So it's a container that we have there, and we're able to store the bike safely. And also the fact that we're right next to the park. Wow, what a fantastic location, because we use the park. We cycle in the park and through the park to everywhere from that area around Wolverhampton and the Black Country.
So when can people come and experience No Limits to Health? Like, when are your events?
So our regular programme, Paul.
Mm.
Yeah. So on a Wednesday, we run a cycle ride, a lead ride, at 9:30
in the morning.
In the morning, back at 12:30,
mm-hmm.
and we repeat that on the Saturday. So Wednesdays and Saturdays are our regular adults and families, you know, singles, parents, senior citizens. We've got a lot of senior citizens that come.
So they can join you with their own bikes, and they can also borrow one of your bikes.
Absolutely. So if they want to bring their own bike, yes, but we also have a fleet of bikes that are free to use. So,
and helmets?
Yes, we provide helmets. Definitely want to be safe. And it's not, although it's not compulsory, we always recommend the wearing of helmets, because it's been proven that they can actually prevent serious head injuries.
And you're the cycling mayor of Wolverhampton.
I certainly am. So I'm part of an amazing global network, Paul. So the Bicycle Mayor Network, it's a voluntary role. It's not anything to do with political or anything. It's a voluntary role. Anybody who's passionate about cycling can become and apply to become the bicycle mayor of their city.
Okay.
And you apply, you've got to be nominated by three individuals of outstanding position in your city.
And how long are you it for?
It's a 3-year post, and you're networking with bicycle mayors literally all around the globe. And the key thing about the bicycle mayor is that you're promoting, working in partnership with your local authority to promote everything about cycling. So the cycling infrastructure, one of my jobs is to really promote and say that Wolverhampton is changing for the better. Why? Because the City Council, I want to give a big shout out for Wolverhampton City Council. I sit on the Cycle Forum, and we're spending millions building new cycle lanes that connect the city centre to the suburbs.
And so tell us, where can people register to come and join your things, and where's your website?
Yeah, so visit nolimitstohealth.com. You can just Google it. You'll probably come straight up, and you go on our website, and you can click on the link to register. Now, right now, we're kind of closing down for winter, but back in the spring, early spring, we're going to start our 2024 year of cycling.
We'll have you back on then. Thank you for coming, Sam. In the studio now are two local legends beyond belief in their status in the city. What are you laughing at? It sounds like you're not.
It's just true. It's true. It's just true, isn't it? So,
which is Hannah Boyd and Moya Lloyd. Hello, welcome.
Hi there.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Sam. It's a pleasure as always, and hopefully you're going to come on a lot more.
Oh, yes, do hope so.
That's all I want to hear. You've got to behave yourself. So tell us, what are you going to tell us about now?
So I'm going to tell you about the workshops that I run in my studio, the art room at New Hampton Arts Centre, the art and wellbeing classes that I've been doing at St Chad and St Mark's in Penfields, and the different kind of activities and workshops and projects we're doing at Boundary Way, project at the Boundary Allotments, mm-hmm. and community gardens, and kind of like the things we've done around environmental issues and engaging with nature and stuff like that.
Basically, you're doing it all, aren't you?
Yeah, I do the lot. So if you need me to do anything, I can do it.
Let's let Moira have a word.
Go on, Moira.
Right? Go on. So your focus is Boundary Way, yes?
Yeah, so I'll start by telling a bit about Boundary Way Project and what that is, because that's one of the projects that Hannah and I have been collaborating on. And it's a creative project that encourages people to connect with nature. And we've been working at Boundary Way allotments and community garden since around 2015, developing activities that engage with nature. And over lockdown we developed in new ways, which has really opened up possibilities of working not just within the setting of the allotments, but connecting with people virtually, as lots of people did online, starting to run creative workshops online, and make partnerships across the UK and even internationally.
And that's Arts Council funded?
We have had Arts Council funding, but we've also had Heritage Lottery funding and various other lottery.
Excellent. So we're going to talk a bit more, but just so I get it in and I don't forget it at the end. So how do people contact you if they want to be involved? Moya first.
You can contact us via social media. We're on Instagram, Boundary Way Project, and X and Facebook. You can contact us via our website, boundaryway.co.uk, as well, and via email, boundarywayproject@gmail.com.
Excellent. So, and Hannah, how do people find out more about what you're doing?
So I've got a website, it's Hannah Boyd Art. I'm on the New Hampton Arts Centre website as Hannah Boyd Art, the art room. You could check out my Instagram, that's also Hannah Boyd Art. See a theme coming here.
I do see a theme there. But your website needs updating.
My website.
Your website does need updating.
Yes, it does need updating.
I can only say that because you told me that over the years.
My guilty secret. Well, not so secret if you look on my website. That does need an update. But if you just contact me, Hannah Boyd Art @gmail.com, and my details are all on the New Hampton Arts Centre website as well.
So why is what you do important, particularly for health and wellbeing?
It really kind of like engaging lots of different people. Like in my art classes, I have like adults, I have children, all mixed together with the art and wellbeing. It's, you know, people with different health conditions. With a Boundary Way, it's just a complete mixture of people, and getting them to engage with nature, or getting them to develop skills, observation skills, their confidence, kind of like everything that goes hand in hand really with that, and just kind of really helping to like build a community of artists and people that are interested in different things. And I love connecting with different people and talking ideas, and, you know, see how that kind of like grows naturally. I really kind of like buzz off that. So if there's anyone ever interested in doing any project, just give me a shout, because I'll probably be interested in collaborating with you.
And Moya, so what have you got coming up on Boundary Way that you can tell us about? Or are you hibernating for the winter?
We're hibernating a bit, not particularly for the winter, but because we're kind of reimagining our project. As I said earlier, we started to develop in new ways, and we've had new partnerships, and we're we're kind of looking at how we can make it relevant to what's happening in our city today. And one of the projects that Hannah and I recently collaborated on was called Warm This Winter, and it was about looking at how the cost of living crisis is affecting people in Wolverhampton. Hannah engaged with people through making a film.
Yeah.
And we looked at issues such as sustainable homes and highlighted things that, you know, our houses aren't really suitable for being energy efficient. Mm. We're all wasting energy, and obviously everyone's affected by the high bills that we're paying. So through a creative film, yeah, we were able to give people an opportunity to say their feelings about how it affects them.
And so I know, because I've been down a couple of times to you, you have events and festivals and mushroom hunting. So you're planning that in the spring again, or...?
We'd like to definitely get back to the fungi.
Because hopefully we may even be able to come down and do some recording and live and get you on the show again.
That
will be good. We're
doing a lot around the seasons, aren't we? And this year's been kind of like, a lot of the focus has been looking at the different seasons, and we've been having celebrations and creating art in response to that, cooking different dishes and using produce from Boundary Way and kind of engaging with different people. So I think there'll be a lot that will come in the future about like the seasons and engaging with like folklore. I've been learning how to Morris dance.
Someone has to.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad it's you.
And I feel sorry for my poor neighbour, because I'm also learning to play the bagpipes. So
you are a nightmare, aren't you? So we're going to finish there. But just tell me, you're open to people from across the city?
Yes, definitely. Yeah,
and
definitely.
Is that true of Boundary Way as well? Or are you much more focused about the locals around Boundary Way?
No, it's across the city and way beyond as well. We've got people that we connect with internationally, as well as different parts of the UK with our virtual sessions.
So, absolutely brilliant. Well, we'll have you back again, but thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Our guest now is the legend of Asan, as we like to say, Shoba Asan Paul.
Hello, Paul.
Tell us about yourself.
Hello, Paul. I've been with the Asan, All Saints Action Network, for around 6 years now, and I'm the chief officer there. Mm-hmm. It's quite the organisation itself has been around for about 30 years and 25 years as a registered charity and incorporated body, as they say. The sort of work that we do really is primarily focused around the All Saints area of Wolverhampton. So that's our sort of area of benefit, as it were. And we're a community development trust, which means really that we deliver community-led action. We've got a board of directors, and we address issues around social needs, economic needs, and we have a number of community businesses.
And you have your own building.
We have our own building,
which is always a nice thing to have.
It is. We've got a school that the organisation bought around about that time, early on in its when it started, and we finished paying our mortgage payments last year. So that is a
big thing. Excellent. Yeah. So you own it outright, freehold.
We do.
That's a very lucky position.
It's great. It was a great thing last year when we'd finished our mortgage payments.
And so who's in the building, and what do you do in the building? Tell us a bit more about
that. So the building is one of our community enterprises, and the building itself we call the workspace. And it was an old school. We've got 21 offices that we rent out within that building, and we've got conference facilities. We have a community cafe, which we started just before COVID. You know, all the best things started.
Perfect time.
Absolutely perfect. We opened it for about 2 weeks, now to shut it again. So we've got a community cafe.
So those cakes went a little bit mouldy over that time, aren't they? So you had to get new ones in.
Despite sort of keeping them in the fridge and the freezer, they had gone off quite badly. We've got this catering facility and community cafe, and our catering service provides meals to our nursery, which is also located within the building. And the nursery families are largely from the area. I would say about 98% of the children families are from All Saints.
And people can hire the spaces as well?
People can hire. We would love for people to hire the spaces. We've got great facilities there. We do great deals, very competitive, brilliant staff. So please do.
Well, and before I remember, because we get short time, how do they do that? Do you have a website and all that kind of stuff?
We do. We have a website, asan.org.uk. We're quite regular users of Facebook, Instagram, all of that. So use any of those usual social media channels. And we're on the phone. A real life person will talk to you.
A real life person on the phone.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So you're not a bank then, that's for sure.
We're a proper grassroots organisation. And we have football pitches as well, five a side. Well, they're not just football. We have five a side
opportunities.
Opportunities. That's right. We have three five a side size pitches. Yeah.
Right.
That are, you know, available for people to come and play on.
Let's talk about Wood Saints.
Yeah.
That's your gang, isn't it?
That is what we do.
So, yeah. So firstly, your building, it's basically behind the Royal Hospital, that kind of area.
Yes, that's right.
So and then let's come on to Wood Saints. So tell us about Wood Saints.
So we entered into a franchise around 5 years ago with an organisation which is based in Brighton. And they are a national wood recycling organisation. And we took out a franchise with them. And we were looking to get into something which would help to deliver one of our key objectives, which is to make the area more sustainable in terms of its carbon footprint and to support some of the objectives within the city around those aims. So Wood Saints we have a wood depot which is on Dixon Street, still within the All Saints neighbourhood. It's a 10,000 square foot unit, and what we do there is that we save waste wood from going into landfill. And we do that by primarily with construction companies or local companies who otherwise would just chip their wood, get rid of their wood. We collect that wood and we either sell it to the DIY market or we make bespoke products. We have a number of volunteers that we have at the wood depot who are amazing and, you know, will make fantastic benches and all sorts of things from wood, which otherwise would just go into landfill.
And so it's been a very successful franchise.
Yeah, it's been very successful.
It brings you in income to be able to support the other work that you do.
Yeah, the income is a moot point. The social value part of it is really where we've excelled with that.
Yeah, yeah.
The income side of it, it's an enterprise because it's asking companies to think a bit differently. Mm. You know, when you start a piece of work, don't just get your local skip company or don't just think about just getting rid of that wood and be on that sort of single track. Think about what else you can do. Mm. I mean, what it does require is that for construction companies, for example, to separate the wood from the rest of the rubble. And, you know, sometimes it's difficult to do that. Mm. So the economic side of it, the financial side of it is a challenge, to be honest.
And we had West Midlands Combined Authority, West Midlands Greener together, and they provide some support for you.
Yeah. They were. That was a great piece of work that we did with them, and through our collaboration with them, they helped us to increase the biodiversity in the area. So the objectives of having a more circular economy within Wolverhampton, and the ambition of making our area more to increase the biodiversity, that was really greatly enabled through our work with the Combined Authority. What that's meant is that we've got some huge planters and we've got a community playground, and that community playground now has been you know, we've got the sort of planting which really supports the kids to have a lovely space, and clearly through the objectives of the biodiversity dimension, we have a lot of plants which are great for the the bees and, you know.
And how are the trees out the front? Because the last time I was down there, we were planting some trees. I hope you're going to be positive about
them. The trees are... There are a few trees which are hanging on.
They are hanging on.
There are, you know, because of the pitches there, sometimes we get some over-exuberant youths who do like to sort of have a little pot shot at the trees. But there are a few who are still going there, and hopefully we'll be able to get some more planted.
And I take it the council are one of your big supporters as well, the Wolverhampton City Council.
Yeah, we have great support from the council. The other project that we do and that we've been doing for a long time is our recycling service. Mm-hmm. So what we're able to do through that is that, you know, people want to get rid of any household item, you know, a mattress, bed, things that they would find difficult to take to the local tip. They can give us a ring, and we and the local authority gives us a number of permits across the year. So we will pick that up free of charge, and we'll take it to the tip for you. And the other really nice thing about that, Paul, is that Serge, who's our caretaker and who mm-hmm. provides that for the community, is that if somebody, for example, is getting rid of a chest of drawers, he'll know someone in the area who's after a chest of drawers.
Yeah.
So instead of that going into the council's tip, he can deliver it to number 24 and say, here's a chest of drawers, you know, you can that I got from number 48. So that's a fantastic thing. Again,
absolutely.
That contributes to the whole sort of circular economy.
And do you have any Christmas events coming up?
We do. Thanks, Paul. We have a Christmas fair that we've got coming up, and that's always fantastic. I think it's on the 8th of December, but I can't remember the date. But please,
but they can look it up on your website.
They can look it up on the website.
That's the key thing.
Yeah, and we have we try and really do a lot for the children. We've got an entertainer. We've got Santa. Santa's coming. I think he's the elves have started to build a grotto. So, you know, lots for children. Some great food that the cafe will be providing. So, yeah, would encourage people to come to that.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for coming on the show and telling us all about it.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening. Join us on WCRFM 101.8, also available on DAB Radio, every day across Wolverhampton. If you are making a difference, let us know. Check out the website www.wcrfm.com. I've been Paul Dark and will, hopefully, continue to be so.
For more information about WCR podcasts, go to wcrfm.com/podcasts.